people have powerful feelings about the traffic in Los Angeles, it says something that local officials warned motorists about a temporary road work closure on the 405 last year by calling it Carmageddon. Angelenos took the hint, and this weekend they're expected to steer clear of the latest 405 closure, named, of course, Carmageddon 2. That's how it is in L.A., a snarl of overstuffed freeways and commuters who keep their cool, except when they don't. KPCC's Stephen Cuevas has this profile of a punk rocker whose music expresses the insanity of L.A. traffic while extolling the virtues of public transit.
Couple of things you need to know about Eddie Solis. He lives in L.A., loves the band Kiss, and does not own a car.
Being someone who's from L.A., born and raised, and, you know, having a few cars in my past, I saw the city much differently through a different perspective through the eyes of a bus rider.
Want this all the way to the back?
Sure. Line 18, Wilshire Western Station.
Just steps from the front door of his home, across the street from a tortilla factory in L.A.'s Boyle Heights neighborhood, Solis catches a bus that connects him with the city's subway and the commuter train he catches to his day job at an indie record label in Hollywood.
It just opened me up to, like, little neighborhoods, galleries, clubs, bars, just everything. Just seeing what's out there, little pockets of the city.
Solis's journeys aboard L.A. buses and subway cars informs a lot of the material on The New Los Angeles Part 1, Through the Eyes of a Bus Rider, the latest release by the singer-guitarist band It's Casual. In Solis's vision of a new Los Angeles, people abandon their cars, climb aboard public transit, and rediscover their communities. One song extols the virtues of the L.A. County Metropolitan Transit Agency's Easy Pass and the urban underbelly it introduces to the rider.
And that's a nod and homage to, you know, the people who know what you can even go cheaper and really beat the system and really steer away from spending money on gas and oil profits and all that. Is all it takes for me to witness racial tension, for me to witness illegal aliens. It's not to paint a negative picture, it's just my perspective of what is seen.
Off the bus and back on the street, we make our way past a jazz saxophonist playing for pocket change and down a long escalator to catch a train.
So, where are we now?
We're at the Red Line station, the Pershing Square station in downtown L.A.
And what's our destination?
We're going to go down Fares, another tier, and in about 5 minutes, we're going to get on the Red Line going northbound.
Okay, yeah. Let's go.
The Metro Red Line snakes from North Hollywood to downtown Los Angeles. It's the train that inspired It's Casual's signature tune and spawned a viral internet video. It was partly filmed late at night on a moving train as it hurtles from station to station. Solis thrashes away on his guitar and barks the lyrics, which celebrate the Red Line and call out the congested freeways that coil around Los Angeles.
Este es un tren de Metro Red Line a North Hollywood.
The 210, the 605, the freeways are not so nice. The I-5, the 210, the freeways are not so nice.
The thread that comes out of the record that ties everyone together is just like, be alive, don't be a victim of having a car.
MTA spokesman said he couldn't comment on Eddie Solis's furious pro-Metro message, but the Red Line video was a hit at the offices of Move LA.
Eddie's done a good job. Thank you, Eddie.
It's the public transportation advocacy group headed by former Santa Monica Mayor Denny Zane. He liked the juxtaposition of Solis blissfully riding L.A. public transit in one scene with scenes of the band raging against those notorious freeway jams.
Eddie is all frantic when he talks about highways. And so mellow when he's like grooving on a skateboard and on the bus and on the Red Line, there's a metaphor for the transformation, you know, from the, oh my God, I just got to get out of the traffic to, hey, this is cool. I can mellow out.
Or you can blast the tune like Too Many People as you claw your way across Los Angeles by car, bus, or skateboard. Too Many People could also be a motto for its casual. Over the years, the band whittled itself down to a power duo of Solis and a rotating cast of drummers. So you may think the burly, bearded punk rocker just can't get along with freeways, with people, or his native LA. Not true.
I love it. I love everything about it. I've traveled throughout the U.S. many times, and I could never look forward enough to coming back. The weather, the different cultures, the landscape. I was just like, you know what? Now I know why everyone moves to L.A.
Solis will bring the love and the volume during a Red Line mini tour next month. It's Casual will play a different venue within walking distance of several Red Line metro stops from Union Station to West Hollywood. For the California Report, I'm Stephen Cuevas.
That's the California Report, a production of KQED Public Radio in San Francisco. Our director this week is Nina Thorson. Seal Muller is our technical producer. We had additional engineering from Danny Bringer and Howard Gelman. Thanks to Hank Hadley at KCBX. Our online team includes Lisa Pickoff-White, David Marks, and Don Clyde. Our interns are Catherine Borgeson and Rachel Johnson. Tyke Hendricks is our elections editor with production help from Tina Lauerberg. We had editing support from Paul Rogers. Victoria Malione is our associate senior producer. Ingrid Becker is our senior producer. The news director is Bruce Kuhn. I'm Rachel Miro. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend. This is the California Report.
Funds for the California Report are provided by the James Irvine Foundation, expanding opportunity for the people of California and supporting the California Report since its premiere in 1995. And the California Endowment. Health happens in schools at calendow.org. And Chevron, investing in renewables, strengthening communities, and creating jobs. More information at chevron.com.
The 210, the 605, the freeways are not so nice. The I-5, the 210, the freeways are not so nice. The 101, the 405, the freeways are not so nice. The I-5, the I-10, the freeways are not so nice. The 210, the 605, the freeways are not so nice. The I-5, the I-10.
Welcome to another special edition of Los Angeles Nista. I'm your host, Edward Solis. And tonight, we're going to break the show in half. First hour, we got beersinparadise.com. And second hour, we got the Oil Heights Paranormal Project. Boo. So let's get to it. All right. To my left, we got Roy and we got Guillermo from beersinparadise.com. Hey, how you guys doing?
Very good. How are you, man?
Good. I'm good. I'm excited because you guys brought these nice little glass tasting glasses, beer,
right,
and your knowledge. So this is what we're all about is, and you know, getting information, collecting it, and dispersing it to our thousands and thousands of listeners and around the world. So you ready?
Awesome. Yeah,
ready. All right. Okay, well, you know, I got a question for Roy.
Sure.
When this blog you're doing, when did you start it?
We started this about 3 years ago, about in July. So it'll be 3 years in July. And the way we started this blog was more of a website so that people can post beers of their travels, wherever they travel out in the world, any country. You know, you go out and you got to get some of their beers and post pictures of your beers and whatever back scenery you have, you know, the beach or the Eiffel Tower, or Statue of Liberty. So people would be able to post them on our site. We tried it out, but it wasn't really working out. People weren't really posting that much stuff. So around the same time, we discovered craft beer, you know, the bars that we were visiting.
Huge, huge, huge demand for that right now, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So we kind of came in right when it was already kind of starting. And yeah, we met a lot of brewers, a lot of, you know, bars serving craft beer, rotating taps. And from there on, I mean, it just changed.
That's fantastic. Now, you know, part of the format here, I always want to inform people by region, by city, right, what's out there. Then tell them how to get there by public transportation, especially for drinking. Because if you're drinking, I don't want you driving.
Of course
right?
not. Of course not.
No DUIs, no Deweys, no breathalyzers. Mm-hmm. No, you know, I don't want, you know, my fans or the listeners to be, you know, on a sidewalk when we're down the street and seeing them taking those, you know, those drug tests, right?
Nobody.
None of that. But Guillermo, okay. You are a Whittier guy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I got to start with you and Whittier. Personally, as a blogger and someone who knows a lot about different beers and patronizes bars, what's your favorite bar in Whittier?
I'll have to say the 40.
The 40?
Yeah.
6740.
6740.
On Greenleaf?
Yes.
Okay. Now, tell me, why do you choose them out of everyone else?
Well, I guess it just depends on what I'm in the mood for. I like their food.
Overall, the consistency of the place you like?
Yeah. I mean, they have a pretty good selection, always. And they'll always have some pretty unique beers
right there.
But I love their food, too.
Right now, what are they carrying as far as some of the, you know, the craft beers and the boutique beers over there? I mean, is there anything that you go there particularly for that they're carrying?
It just depends on what they're rotating. You know, they'll announce what they're having.
How often is a rotation?
What do you say, about once a week?
Yeah, about once a week. The thing with the 40, they're more of a, I'm going to say, my favorite kind of dive bar. They have an awesome jukebox. Mm-hmm. In fact, that's where we kind of started. I'm gonna give them, you know, credit because that's actually where we would have meet for Beers in Paradise meetings, supposedly. We would meet there, right? And the 40, you know, they also have, you know, your regular Pabst, your Budweiser.
The standards.
Your standard
stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They have about 30 taps, I think. And, you know, they have Lagunitas. They work with Lagunitas a lot. And that's where we kind of discover some of the craft beer. But, I mean, Mike, he's the owner of the 40, one of the owners.
Right.
Awesome guy, man. And he's always supporting us.
Very cool. You said the jukebox. Okay, I got to admit. Misfits, Ramones,
you got
X,
it.
Yes. 40
some Black
it.
Flag.
A lot of 40 has
you know, some Nirvana, Black Sabbath.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, nothing wrong with that.
You know what? You're drinking, you're having a good time, you're with your friends, then you hear that Black Sabbath song, you get into
well,
it.
Well, you know
it's
what's
awesome.
So funny is, you know, all of Uptown Whittier closes early. Do you guys know
That's
why? What is it?
Because it's a Quaker town?
Is it?
is that what it is?
Well,
a serious question.
I know everybody has to apply for a different operating license there in Whittier. So everybody closes at a different time just about.
Well, yeah. I mean, last call there, I mean, they close at 12 or 1.
I think 11:30 is last call.
11:30 is last call, but they close at 12.
Yes.
So, I mean, that's like, wow, that's early.
That's early. Mm-hmm.
You know, in heavy foot traffic areas like downtown Long Beach, you know, in LA and Hollywood, that's when people are just going out. So if you're used to that and go over there, I think it's good to let people know in reviews that, hey, maybe you want to get here a little earlier.
That's true.
That's possible, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's just, it's not just them, it's the whole town, I think.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. Does that sound right?
Yeah. And also, we got to also mention the Bottle Room, across which is right across the street.
Oh, I haven't been there.
Oh, I mean, the amazing food chef, Tony Aguilar.
How big is that place?
It's fairly decent. It's a small place.
But it's smaller than the 40.
Oh, yeah? It's smaller?
What is it? Capacity 50 or something like that?
Maybe 50.
50. Yeah, but those guys, I mean, you get the taps, the craft beer that goes through there is amazing. I mean,
wow.
That they really step it up right there. And then the chef, the food, it's amazing too. I love that food.
Okay, I had this woman in here named Lena Licaro. She wrote a book called 100 Dive Bars You Must Visit in Los Angeles Before You Die.
Mm.
Right? And she covered Ember's Lounge.
Oh, did she?
Really? In the book, yeah. Mm. She's a contributor for LA Weekly. The book did really well worldwide. She was in here about 2 months ago. And she had Ember's and Poor Danny's. Now, those are dive bars,
mm-hmm.
right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So, have you guys been to both?
I have.
Okay.
I think I've been to the last one.
Right. So, Ember's has the celebrities burning in hell, right? On, you know, the pictures on the wall. That's what they're known for.
Huh. I haven't seen that.
Yeah. I mean, no, they're it's huge pictures. And they're apparently, like, if you look closely at the faces, they're all, like, well-known celebrities, but they're in hell. Like, there's see the flames and the fire and the brimstone and the devil,
right.
All that stuff. So, it has a lot of character. It's very small. You know, you would kind of think of it as a place where, you know, like a divey Long Beach bar. But as far as Poor Denny's Saloon, I mean, how would you describe that? It just seems like it's like a classic place where older people hang out.
Mm-hmm.
The drinks are cheap, you know, very like
really paneling on the walls and, you know, takes you back to like the 70s.
Early 60s, like decor, that kind of thing. As far as the Stein across the street, have you ever been there?
No.
That place looks dangerous.
Was it called next to the liquor store?
Yeah.
Oh.
By Jack in the Box?
Yes, I would not.
Yeah. It just seems like people go there not to drink, but to do other things.
Right?
And, you know, transactions of some sort are going down. And I don't know if it's, you know, what kind of transactions, but
yeah
it's crazy. It's crazy. So what about... Let's see. We covered the Uptown. What about what's the other bar on Whittier Boulevard? Slam Dunk.
See, that's another. Oh, I don't know. I tend not to go there that often because
this is more of a sports bar.
It's more of a sports bar.
Yeah, they don't really have craft.
It's not really a place where you go and like taste different craft beers and kind of like sit down in your comfort and really take your time. It's more of like people playing darts, band playing in the corner.
They close at 2 o'clock, 1 o'clock. Yeah, I mean, so they're open. Later.
Right. I was just curious, since we're on the Whittier topic, is there any other Whittier destinations we should mention?
Yeah, there's a lot of great spots. I mean, there's Vinatero. It's a wine shop right on the street on Greenleaf. They also have a good selection of craft beer. They have like two taps, but they have a bunch of bottles.
Now, it's on Greenleaf.
Yeah, it's on Greenleaf. It's towards, I guess, north on Greenleaf before Hadley. The Spin Lounge also.
I've been there.
Spin Lounge, the more of the DJ type younger crowd.
Right.
But they also have a good selection of craft beers.
So it's all along the Greenleaf Drag. Yeah. You can hop each, right?
Yeah, yeah. You could also have some sushi at Bamboo's. They have they have a lot of taps there too.
Very cool, you know? Very cool.
And what I like about it is that they're introducing craft beer to people that normally don't drink craft beer. And they're doing a good job, I think, you know.
That's awesome. I got a question for Guillermo. What do you think as far as the craft beer that's out on the market right now, what are you leaning towards as a personal favorite for you? Like, what do you find yourself buying at the bars these days when you really want to, you know, satisfy your taste?
I'm always having IPAs.
IPAs?
Always. That's why we're having the Ballast Point Sculpin tonight.
Where's that made?
This one's from San Diego. Where exactly? Yeah, San Diego.
San Diego, Ballast Point, good friends of ours. We love this beer. I mean, I was able to pick some cans up. They just released them a couple of weeks ago. Great cans to go out to the beach, the pool, right? Fresh. Probably one of my favorite IPAs at this moment right now. But yeah, good stuff.
All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back with more beersinparadise.com. Thank you very much.
This is Ignacio Salcido from La Mascota The Bakery in Boyle Heights. You're listening to LA Nista and SkidRowStudios.com.
This episode of Los Angeles Nista is brought to you by La Mascota Bakery, a family-owned business serving the community since 1952. tamales, and sweetbread. Made the old-fashioned way daily.
Don't yourself.
Welcome back to Los Angeles, Nista. I'm your host, Edward Solis. My in-studio guest the first hour, the gentlemen, Roy and Guillermo from beersinparadise.com. How you guys doing?
Awesome. We're doing good.
Okay. Roy, you just poured something from the Maui Brewing Company for us to sample.
Yeah, actually.
A good summer beer, right?
Yeah, over the Memorial Day weekend, I figured, I'm going to get some fresh canned beers and whatnot. And I saw this Maui Brewing Company Lemongrass Saison with a collaboration with Lost Abbey from San Diego.
Oh, so it's a collab.
It's a collaboration. Okay. So a lot of these brewers now, some of these boutique brewers
are doing more of that,
They're doing a lot of collaborations. Yeah, they get together and they just kind of get together one day and just brew and just mix it up. But this one right here is a Belgian-inspired Saison with lemongrass. It's a refreshing beer. I mean, I love this beer.
Well, thanks for sharing. Perfect for summer. I want to get Adam Murray, our house photographer here, his take on it. What do you think? I mean, because you work in the bar business and poured a lot of drinks in your time, right?
Right, definitely.
How would you describe this?
It's delicious. It's a little nutty on top, but that lemongrass definitely comes in somewhere toward the finish and kind of cleans off your palate a little bit. And just like the gentleman said, it's a great daytime beer. It's refreshing.
Not too heavy, is it?
Not at all.
Right. Now, have you tried the Maui Brewing coconut?
Yeah. Very good.
How would you compare that? Is it pretty much the same lightness?
No, that one's much darker, and it's got more of like the, I think I haven't had it in a while, but I remember it had kind of more of like a coffee notes and whatnot. And sure. And that's definitely more of almost like a, late night, mellow down beer.
Like dessert beer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Speaking of which, Guillermo was telling me that there's a lot of concoctions being made up these days. So you actually make beer floats, right?
Yeah, you can make a beer float with stout.
Yeah, that Maui Brewing Company coconut porter. I mean, that's amazing with some vanilla bean ice cream. Pour that over. Oh,
so just like in a mug.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's it.
Like a root beer float.
That. Mm-hmm. Done.
And a lot of people are coming up with a lot of mixed beer drinks now.
Oh, explain. Yeah.
I had one a couple of weeks ago. I think it was like an Irish. It was almost like an Irish coffee.
Oh wow!
But drink. This is what it reminded me of.
Okay.
I couldn't tell exactly what it was in it, other than beer.
Right.
But it was delicious.
It was delicious. It was. So it's like the beer. Adam, have you had any experience with the floats or anything?
A while ago, some buddies of mine actually made a float with a Corona. Just actually. Kind of joking around because we were just kind of bored and there were Coronas there. And then we tried it and it was actually pretty good. And we had no idea that people were doing that. We just kind of thought it would be a funny thing. And then we kind of realized that it tastes good because, you have a root beer float, but those are like incredibly sweet. It's a root beer float.
Sure.
So you have a beer float. You still get like a little creamy sweetness, but then the bitterness of the beer balances it out a little more. And it's kind of like an enjoyable...
You know what's funny? I think there's such a mindset for people not to pour beer into a mug of ice cream. And it's kind of like, it's so simple. You just do it. But I just think people are doing it, but not a lot of people are doing it. So I think there's a lot of room for development right now.
And that's where we come in. I mean, we have a lot of friends that don't drink craft beer and we try to educate and tell, hey, listen, give it a try. I mean, because before you can't really have a Bud Light and eat something, right? I mean, you can't pair anything with that. But with craft beer, you can. You can actually pair with different type of foods and whatnot, right? Like an IPA.
Mm-hmm. For the person, Roy, that doesn't know anything about this, explain to them what a craft beer is.
Well, craft beer, it's just, I would just say it's the non-Budweiser, none of the
it's
Miller.
It's boutique, it's independent.
It's made with passion. I mean,
exactly.
It's a homebrewer's passion, and this is what he gives you.
It's actually an art.
Exactly.
Than an abstract artist or a sculptor, right?
Exactly. So, and over the past 2 years, I mean, it's been growing in popularity, so.
Very cool. I got a question for Guillermo. I'm a huge coffee fan.
Uh-huh.
All right. I've had Kona coffee beer. Mm-hmm. Are there any other IPAs that are mixed in with coffee?
There, Stone put out a IPA with coffee.
Wow.
The Damon IPA. That was a collaboration.
A collaboration.
So was that like a limited run?
It was a limited run. You can't get it anymore. No. But right now you can probably get the Espresso Imperial Russian Stout from Stone.
Oh, wow.
Which I just had over the weekend.
Is that bottled?
Which is delicious. Yes. Yes. You can get it in the big honor
the big,
bottle.
The big arrogant bastard size.
Yes, the 22 ounce.
The 22 ounce.
That's a great beer. Highly recommend that one.
So it's espresso?
Yeah, espresso.
Did you dig it?
I dug it. I would have that for breakfast.
Would you really?
I would. Yeah, I would have that for breakfast.
Actually, so good. I would recommend the Noble Air Works brewery out in Anaheim. They have something called the Naughty Sauce.
Oh, yeah.
The Naughty Sauce.
It's an amazing
so
beer.
So good.
Yeah.
Ooh.
That's coffee, man. I mean, it's a stout. It's a milk stout, something like that. Like a milk stout.
They call it a milk stout.
Yeah.
But the trippy thing about that beer is that it's not dark, chocolatey looking. It looks like an IPA when you pour it.
Uh-huh.
But it tastes like a stout. It kind of like messes with your mind.
Yeah. It's really coffee.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's called something, but it doesn't really taste like what it's called.
No, it tastes exactly what they call it, but it doesn't look like what it's called.
Sure.
A coffee stout.
Right.
But it's delicious. Is it a stout?
Yeah, it's a milk stout.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Roy, as far as the downtown LA brewery scene, my opinion, as someone who goes out to a lot of gigs to see bands and would like to, you know, try new places, I haven't really seen anything else cooking up here but the Angel City Brewery. Now, is there anything else? Am I missing up here?
There's a couple of new breweries coming up. There's Ohana Brewing, which they're also here in downtown LA, good friends of ours. Eagle Rock Brewery, that's one of the pioneers here in downtown LA.
Oh, they're in downtown?
No, I'm sorry. They're Eagle Rock. Eagle Rock.
But I mean, in downtown proper, though.
Yeah.
It's not really a lot, huh? I mean, San Diego,
yeah,
they're really thriving.
I mean, yeah. I mean, we're catching up. I mean, San Diego, San Francisco, they got it down. I mean, they're big. But we're getting there. Surprisingly, I mean, we're LA, right? And we think
second largest city in the country.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But we are getting there. We're getting there fast. We have Golden Road. I'm sorry, I had to mention them. Mm-hmm. Golden Road.
Golden Road.
Yeah, but we have also some bars that are doing good taps, like Far Bar, right here, Little Tokyo.
Mm-hmm.
What other bar do you?
In downtown.
There's a few. I mean, Wylands right here on the street.
Well, as far as an area where someone could maybe take public transportation to, or just park their car and just walk and cover tons of different bar experiences. Is there an area in LA that you could recommend?
Probably Pasadena.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. You can take the
Gold Line
straight up.
Yeah.
And it'll actually drop you off right there at the Stone Company store.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And you can start there. And
yeah, there's about six bars right now that you can hit up.
So if you get off on that one stop, you can hit about six places.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Wow. Yeah. And the Stone Company store.
Yeah, it's right there, like 10 feet from where the train.
Can you do a lot of tasting there?
They have the whole selection, and they're really inexpensive too. I
mean, you can get like a little glass like this for like $2.
Oh wow!
Just taste the beer.
Oh
right?
Yeah, just taste the beer. I was actually there this afternoon.
Okay, so tell us what's new and exciting there as far as
the Enjoy
it's
By.
Really, yeah, but not just Stone. I mean, we have Haven, we have Congregation Ale House also there, Slater 50/50, Kings Row Barbecue, a bunch of places there.
You know, we're talking about craft beer. We're talking about the passion behind it. I think there's a whole revolution of craft beer happening, you know, as far as people carrying that independent mind and spirit, and they just so happen to be artists of beer making. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of exciting things happening throughout the country as far as, you know, a lot of independent record shops selling vinyl only, a lot of artists making unique boutique art. Boutique, you know, craft beer companies. There's, you know, the Etsy scene, ETSY, where it's catering to women making handmade crafts and goods.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think a lot of people are kind of fed up with being fed the mass production of Walmart and Budweiser and so forth. What do you think, Guillermo? Do you think people are excited to try things made by people like them?
Yeah. I mean, that's... You know, you could, if you really wanted to, you could probably have a different beer each day of the week. There's just so much out there. And Roy mentioned collaborations. One of the things that I really enjoy about the craft beer community is that we're all in this together.
It's a support system.
It's a support system.
There's really no egos.
There's no egos involved. Everybody helps
come as
each
you
other
are.
Out. You know, it's you know, people will loan out their breweries to help somebody else get started. There's really no competition per se within the craft beer community. It's a community.
Exactly what it is.
We're all friends. And there's no competition. I mean, you go to a brewery and you'll see somebody else from a different brewery there. You go to a bar, you see somebody else from a different bar, another owner, and everybody's just friends. And I invite people to go to festivals. There's a bunch of festivals that they put out at the breweries, the bars, beer dinners. Just go out and try new beers because they're out there. And, you know, we need to educate the public. You know, we see all these billboards, Bud Light, Budweiser, Corona, and people think that that's all there is, but there isn't. There's a lot of better beer out there.
It's like, you know, people who don't venture out and explore music.
Exactly.
They just think it's Jay-Z and Jennifer Lopez. Exactly. That's the only music out there, and maybe Metallica. But they don't know that there's a whole underground of punk, rock, metal. It's the same thing with beer. They think it's Bud and Bud Light and Corona.
It's like the local music scene.
Yeah.
Which I guess you can relate to.
Same analogy.
Local, yeah, same analogy. Exactly.
Right? And people network the same way. It's like the band comes through town. Oh, just stay with me kind of thing. You know, they're on tour. It's like, oh, you're coming through town. Just use my brewery.
Exactly.
Right? Same thing. Now, as far as, same question for each person. Let's start with Roy. As far as a craft beer that hasn't been made yet, what do you see in your head that you want to taste that hasn't been bottled? Is there anything?
Wow. That's crazy. That's a good question.
That's a tough one.
Yeah, right now at this moment, I'm into sour beers. I think that's like the new thing right now. Back then it was the IPAs. Last year was like IPAs. But now I'm into sour beers. I don't know. I mean, there's so much stuff out there, barrel-aged beers.
Anything you want to taste in a bottle that you haven't?
What have I not tasted? You know what?
Bacon beer?
Taco beer. Because people are experimenting. I mean,
what about it? Apple and banana.
I haven't tried a tequila beer. Tequila, you know, agave. Mm-hmm. I haven't tasted one yet.
An agave beer.
I don't know.
There actually is a bacon beer, by the way.
Really?
Yeah.
That doesn't sound like it would be good.
I haven't heard good things about
it. I haven't tried it yet. I don't know. Have you? I think who does it? Who does that?
Rogue,
yeah. There you go, yeah.
You know what I want to try? Cerveza de birria.
So what is that? Goat?
Goat beer. And it would be if I bottled my own beer, it would be that. Yeah. And it could be a very like sinister demonic label of a goat. Right?
Yeah.
In like a Mexican meat market.
Kind of like Venom's logo.
Like Venom. But without the pentagram.
Oh,
okay. I want to appeal to the masses. I don't want to scare no one. I don't want to scare the soccer moms. I want their discretionary dollars. No, but it would be like a more like blonde, reddish beer. Blood of the goat.
Hey, that'll work. Hey,
I like that.
Someone's probably listening.
I'm going to contact my intellectual property lawyer and patent that idea. I'm just kidding. No, okay. So what about you, Guillermo? I mean, you're saying the taco beer. What was that?
I mean,
is there anything that you want to taste in a bottle that you haven't?
No, I can't really think of anything. I mean, I'm pretty happy with what's out there right now.
Well, how about as far as, I got a question for you guys, being into it as much as you are. What do you think about Ramirez Liquor? Let's start with you, Roy. Is that really
Ramirez
a great deep selection?
Amazing store. Yeah, I love that store. Boyle Heights, they just opened up a new store in here in Pico Rivera.
Yeah.
Beautiful store. I mean,
I know people that drive from West Hollywood.
Yeah.
That work out past the Viper Room.
Right.
That come in once a month to stock up.
Yeah. I mean, you go in there, you're like a little boy, right, in a candy store. Like, you don't know what to get. I remember going in there just to get a beer, and I'm in there for an hour, man, just trying to like decide what was
just staring at bottles all day for an hour, trying to figure out what
to get. It's like the record store, right? Back in the day,
you're just like browsing through vinyls.
So we have a liquor store where we're from Whittier, and there's also a liquor mart also
on Whittier Boulevard.
On Whittier Boulevard. They've been there since 1976, I think. So they have a good selection of craft beer. In fact, that's where we started buying some of the rare beers, I guess that you can say, right?
That's where I got my start.
Oh, great.
That's where I got hooked, I should say.
I mean, it seems like once you connect to someone's passion and you're passionate about the taste and just wanting to try something different, you search it out, right? You go online and you connect the dots and you try to find other ones.
Yeah, people,
is that what happens?
People really look for that stuff. I mean, they're out there and it's...
I've made the drive looking for a particular beer.
What's the farthest you've ever drove in a car to get a beer that you couldn't find anywhere?
Oh, maybe just about 10 miles, probably.
10 miles for a beer.
You know that there's these superstar beers, they call them, right? There's Pliny the Younger, done by Russian River up in Santa Rosa. That, I mean, that when that beer comes out to town, people get in line you know, like a day before sometimes, just to get a glass like this big, the way we're drinking, right? I mean, those are really sought-off beers that people look for. There's also Black Tuesday by the brewery out in Placentia. I mean, there's beers that people will actually wait in line for
for hours,
yeah. And pay lots of money for it too. So
now, are there any beer events coming up that you guys know about? Anything you want to turn on to people?
Yeah, absolutely. We have an event actually that we're kind of co-hosting at Schooner at Sunset Beach here by Seal Beach.
Okay.
Yeah, it's
PCH or?
Yeah, off of PCH, yeah. It's Noble Ale Works will be there pouring. It's a pint day actually, because we're going to be there early in the day. So we'll be there. And also on Monday, here at the Perch, right here in downtown LA, we're going to have Strand Brewing from Torrance for Beer Paper LA, who we also contribute with. They're going to have the release of their second issue, the hard copy issue.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah, in fact, I should have
brought Independent Media, food. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
That's awesome.
So, like I said, we're all friends. We all help out each other. And
well, tomorrow, why don't you guys get me a link and I'll post that on the Los Angeles Nista page
absolutely.
And my page
cool.
And we'll get that going. Got a question for you. Do you guys believe in ghosts?
I do.
I don't.
I do.
I haven't seen one.
Definitely. Okay.
I've been freaked out a couple times.
You got some stories?
Not really stories, okay. But just unexplained stuff.
Well, everyone out there in listener world, I want to hear your stories and if you're a skeptic or not, because our next guests coming up after this break are the Boyle Heights Paranormal Project, the guys who facilitate the tours in the very haunted Linda Vista Hospital, third most haunted place in America.
Wow.
All right? So call at 800-893-9562. We'll come back with them right after this break.
Yeah.
welcome back. Welcome back to another episode of Los Angeles Nista. I'm your host, Edward Solis. Now, I'm very excited to introduce our next guests. They are the founders of the Boyle Heights Paranormal Project. And before we get into it and get them on the mic and introduce them, I'm very, very intrigued because not only is it a collective of paranormalists that give tours, but the place where they actually work out of, the Linda Vista Hospital, is one of the most haunted places in America. And it's right here in Los Angeles, right over the 6th Street Bridge in Boyle Heights. Now, before we get into it, I want these guys to introduce themselves. Let's start with Richard.
My name is Richard Burney, and I'm the founder of the Boyle Heights Paranormal Project.
And you brought?
Luis Gonzalez. I'm the community outreach director for the Boyle Heights Paranormal Project.
Okay, great. Now, Richard, when did you have the vision to create this?
I think the idea kind of sprung on me in 2005. I was watching a lot of cable television and stuff like that, and I'm like, wow, you know what? I grew up with a father that was into UFOs and Bigfoot and stuff, and so I decided that I wanted to try to get a group of people together that had the same interests, you know, research of you know, cryptozoology, paranormal science, and stuff like that. So I was running around with a couple of friends in 2009, and we decided to create a group, a grassroots group out of Boyle Heights, and it basically came to be the Boyle Heights Paranormal Project.
It's gotten so much attention, and I've had so many different friends from different circles, people that have moved here from, you know, different cities across the country, and have taken the tour, or people I've grew up with in Whittier or East Los that have taken the tour, and a lot of people have their opinions about the whole paranormal world, right? I mean, what did you say? There's skeptics and non-skeptics.
Yes, you know, I think that one of the strong connections that the members of the Boyle Heights Paranormal Project have is that they, for the most part, the majority of the members are skeptics. Yes, we go into every situation scratching our head and saying, "What the heck was that? Let's break it down. Let's look at this logically. Let's just not think that everything that goes bump in the night that is paranormal or a ghost." Lewis, you want to add anything to
yeah,
that?
For sure. When I met Rich in, I believe it was 2009, Rich, I had been doing quite a bit of research on my own. In fact, I've been doing this for about 16, 17 years. And I had my own group for a while, and I came across Rich at a meetup, at a paranormal theme meetup in Hollywood. And his group was just beginning to get off the ground. But I had been actively researching on my own, and like Rich, I came into the whole field as a complete skeptic. I thought the people who did this were pretty much out of their minds. You know, it's just like I wanted to come in and disprove rather than to prove. So I came in as a complete skeptic. I just thought that people were doing
to prove them wrong.
Yeah, I just came in like, you guys are just nuts. There's got to be a logical explanation, because I lived in the, I still live in the San Fernando Valley, and I live not too far from an old mission, San Fernando Mission.
Okay.
And so maybe a mile from there. And I think what changed my mind one night, and that was August of, I want to say 1999, was I was just recording in a parking lot, empty parking lot right across from the mission. I thought it was silly after about 20 minutes. I went back. I forgot about the recording. About 6 months later, I decided to revisit that investigation or that recording session. Mm-hmm. And I turned on the recorder. I heard cars passing by. Then I heard something rhythmic, and it sounded like a mantra. And then it started to come clear to me, and then I heard the words go back, just really monotone.
Wow.
And I knew two things. I knew that I was the only one in the parking lot at the time, and it wasn't my voice. Now, I'll ask you, is that a ghost? And to this day, I will tell people, I don't know what those voices are. I just know that they're not supposed to be there. And so I can't say that it's proof of life after death. All I could just say, it's something that just still boggles my mind. I'm not going to go on a limb and say, hey, it's a ghost. I'm just letting people make up their own mind about what they're hearing.
So what you're doing is doing the research, collecting the information, presenting it, and letting people make their own decision.
Yeah, I guess that's the best way that...
Like, it exists. Here's what we have.
Here's what we have. Yes. You make up your own mind about what you think that it is. I'm not going to try, because to me it's kind of tantamount to a religious conversion. I can't make you believe that God exists. It's just a waste of my time. It's just too hard. So to make you believe that the paranormal exists is just way too much. Either you have to go into it with, I think, an open mind.
Be very open and just receive
at least that. Yeah.
Now in the paranormal research world. Aren't there different tiers of encounters? Like when something touches you, that's a certain type of encounter. When you hear something, because it's just like different tiers that exist, right?
Yeah, there was a book, I think it was by the author Tyrell, who classified hauntings into three or four different categories.
That's what I was talking about, yeah.
Yeah, there was the recurring one that just keeps visiting over and over.
The residual haunting?
The residual, there's a purposeful haunt that has an actual message to impart, and that's the reason why they're stuck in a certain place and time, because they just feel like they need to say something to somebody, maybe a loved one. They're still not ready to go. So there's different classifications. I think on paper that makes a lot of sense, but in reality, when you're out in the field and you're listening to things, it's kind of hard to say, well, that's a recurring, because you just don't know. It just sounds good on paper, you know, to me. In practice, I guess it's good to have that kind of scholarship behind you, but I think in practice when you're dealing with, especially Linda Vista, when you hear something, it's kind of hard to make up your mind whether or not it has a purpose for being there, or if it's a trauma-related occurrence that perhaps took place and is trying to make contact. Who knows?
I think that the categories that he was aiming towards is the residual, mm-hmm. and
residual
the,
energy,
the negative, right? And the intelligent hauntings.
Yeah, the intelligent hauntings.
And in a place like Linda Vista, you get, it's basically paranormal research 101. It's going to college, you know. Yeah. It's such a great place.
You know? You get it all?
Yeah.
You get it all.
So give us an example, Richard, of each. Negative.
Negative. Like Lewis said, the classic recording of electronic voice phenomena. It's considered phenomena because we can't, you know, determine where it's coming from. It just happens. Voices, you know, yeah. I mean, there's countless theories out there as to why our recorder all of a sudden has a message from a voice that shouldn't be there. You know, from psychokinesis to, you know, some type of mental imprint or something like that. You know,
or radio, stray radio signals.
Yeah. Frequency interference from local radio towers.
That happens.
Yeah.
It does.
That's why I personally, when we're in Hollywood, we don't do any EVPs out there, because there's just so much
ambient noise.
Yeah, ambient noise, frequency interference.
So that's negative.
Negative. A negative haunting is an example of that. It would be an EVP where a voice is saying, you know, get out or go back. It's just not wanting you there.
Yeah.
And so, you know, or it's a warning. A classic warning is one time we were inside the first floor of the surgical area of Linda Vista Hospital, and we received a message telling us, after Lewis asked, you know, are we in danger? And the voice came back and said, it's in the next room. Yeah. It's in the next room.
It said that whole sentence?
Yeah, yeah. It's in the next room. Yeah. Just like that.
And a growl. Wow. Remember that growl that you got?
Yeah, and then another example is a basic, like a bear growl, a really low guttural growl that just came from about 8 feet from where we were standing, and we all kind of like were standing in the dark, dumbfounded, and even during the recording, I'm kind of like giggling because I'm saying to myself, like, you know, what the heck was that, you know?
Yeah.
And you can hear me nervously giggling on the recording after the growl, you know?
Because so, you heard it, and you were kind of like,
whoa, yeah. Totally.
Yeah, I mean, at that point, you didn't experience anything like that.
Right. Exactly. All. That was in 2000, late 2009. Now, as far as an intelligent haunting, I think probably one of the most prolific experiences is one day we just I think we decided to have the crew have a meeting or something like that, and Lewis walked down to the first floor door, just opened it up, and said, "Hello," you know. Everything's mm-hmm. dark and everything. And then all of a sudden, what came back?
I got a little girl's voice that says, hello, back.
A little girl's voice?
I was not expecting that. I'm sorry. Maybe about 1/100th of a second. I mean, just happened. Just as soon as I said it.
It was a direct response.
It was a direct response. Now, we looked. There was no little girls in the building, and it was definitely an answer. It really kind of freaked me out because it's like, it's all well and good to say, I want to see a ghost or I want to experience it. But when something actually happens, it's like, do I really want this to happen here and now with only maybe one person or by myself? You know, it's like, it's pretty profound. And it does make you think about it. The whole paranormal kind of morphed into, you know, what does this all mean? You know, what does it all mean in the greater sense? That's where I am at. I believe in what I believe, but I believe that it does have profound ramifications for maybe people crossing over to a different side and not being so fearful of death, perhaps. For me, I'm afraid of that point in time where we're all going to have to cross over, but probably a lot less so than I was maybe 10, 15 years ago.
Sure, sure.
Because in my mind, I know something's there. Yeah.
Right. Now, Richard, give us an overview of the Linda Vista Hospital. Mm-hmm. As far as, I think it's a great place for you guys to work your project out of because of the history. And obviously, you know, it's a hospital. Let's face it, a lot of people have passed there. Mm-hmm. Okay, but the aura and the imagery of the hospital alone, I mean, just being there at night and taking pictures, I mean, it's that energy is oozing out of the building. Yeah. Okay, tell us about the building and the history.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you bring that up. It's everyone who's been to the hospital, everyone who's spent time there at one time or another feel like they're drawn back to the location. Every time, you know, we get emails talking about, I miss the place so much. I'm like, really? You know, I mean, I understand what they're saying because I feel the same draw,
connection.
You know, the connection.
Cool.
Yeah.
In
1904, the Atchison, Topeka, Santa Fe Railroad were making their way west. And they decided that as they were laying railway down, that they were coming across a lot of industrial accidents. And so mainly amputations, you know, the employees and stuff like that.
Wow.
And so... The Atchison, Topeka, Santa Fe Railroad decided to build two medical facilities on the West Coast. So they purchased land in Boyle Heights and up in Hayward, California, and built two facilities that would meet the medical needs of their employees. And the Santa Fe Railroad Hospital in Boyle Heights was a totally self-sustainable establishment, a facility. It had its own dairy and its, you know, farm and little plantation where it grew everything, and it solely took care of itself, and where the employees and their families can go and get their, you know, medical attention.
As far as the history, I mean, it's 1904 onwards, and it was open till the 80s, right?
Yes. Contrary to what you read on Wikipedia or anything like that, the hospital's never been abandoned. I mean, it was erected in 1907, knocked down in 1926, built back up sometime in 28 because of some seismic issues, and it's been standing ever since. And it closed in 1991, but it was considered the pearl of the hospitals in the United States of America. It was just a state-of-the-art medical facility. It had state-of-the-art surgical staff. Dr. Morrison was renowned as a head surgeon, and you know, until it started, you know, later on in its life, started competing with blossoming medical facilities like St. Vincent's, White Memorial, County USC, and so it lost a lot of its medical staff to those facilities. You know?
Sure. Now, a city like Boyle Heights, which is the first East Side city over the bridge,
yes,
from downtown. You know, it was standing back then when the hospital was erected. It was the home of the old Jewish community of Los Angeles before they fled to Fairfax after World War II.
Yes.
And that's where the first Cantor's Deli stood.
Yes.
In fact, the oldest synagogue in the West Coast is still there, the Breed Street.
Sure.
Yeah, Shul, the Breed Street. Still there. So there's, you know, a lot of history in Boyle Heights. It's very old, and it just seems like that would be the perfect geography for hauntings if they were going to happen.
Yeah, if they're going to happen, yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
And I currently reside in Boyle Heights.
Nice.
And I have the home I live in is very old and not too far from Linda Vista. Now, I'm pretty open to things. I'm pretty good at receiving good vibrations and bad vibrations from people or if I'm in the room by myself. And there's a lot of vibrations happening in the house as far as I just feel things are there, people are moving. But I've never had a bad experience where I felt scared or freaked out.
Right.
But once, out of the 3 years I've lived there, I've had an issue, just once, where I was woken up. I felt I was woken up by someone. Mm. Is there a name for that?
You're talking about night terrors? I think it's...
Well, it wasn't like an erratic, violent shake, but it was like, you know, like you felt someone leaning over you. You know, like when you're just laying down and if there's another body in the room, like maybe when you're
talking about out-of-body experience?
Are you talking more like when you were asleep in the sleep states?
I was asleep.
Okay.
And I just felt a presence over me and I woke up and it was dark and I felt someone there.
Interesting. Right.
Yeah, you know, getting back to like the history part, and I'll get back to your experience. You know, Boyle Heights was an area where the immigrants that were basically coming from the East Coast and trying to make a new life on the West Coast, you know, they were basically stopped at the LA River, what was once basically just a wash, you know?
Sure.
And so they kind of just like the accordion effect of all these different diverse groups of people kind of just buckled up right in there. And, I was pretty fortunate to grow up in Boyle Heights in the 60s and 70s and 80s and 90s. All my neighbors when I was a youngster were Russian and Japanese, and I'm still friends to this day.
That's awesome.
A big group.
Very
of them.
Cultured, right?
Very, very. Yeah. I mean, I remember during the Japanese holiday of Boys and Girls Day, they would hang their flags out and stuff, and so it was a great time, you know. Now, like you said earlier, you know, it made for a perfect potluck of stories. That was one thing that Boyle Heights had, is that everybody had their own cultural beliefs, and the common thread between everybody's beliefs was that backyard fence where everyone would hang over and share the common ghost story. And so getting to your experience, you know, I think everybody at one time or another has experienced what Lewis referred to as like night terrors.
Night terror.
Yeah. And so, you know, some people call it old hag syndrome, you know, because they feel
the white lady.
Yeah, because they feel that somebody's on their chest, kind of, you know,
pressing
their chest. Or some of the urban legends of, you know, I felt somebody was holding me down. I couldn't breathe. I was paralyzed, you know. And it's been explained away as, you know, sleep paralysis. And so, but the experience is very real for people, you know. I know that I experienced it quite a few times growing up, and it scared the heck out of me, where I was just, dripping in sweat, and it was very real, you know. Yeah. So
Sure. And I'm sure there's different tiers of that, just that experience, you know, of the intensity of it.
Yes.
For me, it was, you know, just being pitch dark in the room, sleeping, and just that, like, filling up, you know, such a strong presence that I woke up, and there was no sweats, there was no anything violent.
Yeah.
But it was like dark, and me looking up and saying, wow, there's someone looking at me.
Wow.
I could see the body.
Right.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Like, I could see the outline in the dark, and then, like, got up and turned the light on, and it's like, you know, got that, the shivers for a split second, like, what the hell was that?
Yeah.
But the presence was so strong, like, you know, just, it woke me up. And I knew, you know, in my sleep, I knew I was not alone. Mm. That was the only thing in the 3 years.
Well, you know, most of the homes in Boyle Heights, they're very, very old. The only thing that you see as far as new construction are a lot of the apartment complexes.
Yeah, I believe this house was built in 1917.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
So you're lucky enough to be in one of the OG houses.
It's okay? Completely OG.
Yeah. So a lot of the older homes that we found, in, you know, since 2009, we've been into many of those old Victorian-style homes, you know, and craftsman homes.
Sure.
That a lot of the times we experience what the owners are experiencing, whether it's creaking floors, you know, cabinets that are opening and closing, faucets that are turning off and on. But they all have that same experience that you had, you know.
It's not out of the ordinary.
No, it's not. It's a very common type of experience.
With the other residents you've dealt with.
Yes.
So outside of Linda Vista, you have gone to houses.
Yes, we do.
And you've done investigation there and research.
Yes.
And you've had these kind of stories told to you.
Yes. We've
Very similar?
Very similar. The same, almost exact, you know. We had asked, we put a call out about a year ago, for people to come out to the hospital and sit down and allow us to record their experience growing up. Well, give us your Boyle Heights ghost story, basically. Mm. And we compiled up about 120 really cool stories of people that, you know, who we felt at the time, or we still feel that were very credible in sharing their experience with us and stuff.
Yeah, and I think the common thread, like Rich is saying, that those experiences will cross over even through socioeconomic classification. I mean, if you're, it could be the same ghost story repeated by somebody who's a multimillionaire and versus somebody who, you know, is at the bottom of the socioeconomic, you know, scale. So these stories, they kind of transcend all of that. You know, that's the one thing that's really cool.
It's universal.
It yeah. totally is.
It doesn't discriminate.
And it's also, you know, one thing that I think that that needs to be said here is that there's a huge psychological component to what we're also investigating. So you can never discount that psychological explanation as well.
Right. Now, as far as you guys working outside of Linda Vista, so you have gone to homes?
Yes. We've done residentials, businesses.
And have you found that most of the homes in Boyle Heights, the old homes that we're talking about, are pretty, I mean, they're facilitating some energy or ghosts. Is it safe to say that?
Yeah. Almost every person... Almost every person that walks over to the hospital while we're there, they are locals and they all have a story to tell, and it's about a haunting in their home.
You know? Wow! Now, is there anything you could share that it hasn't been told? Maybe just privately to you. Anything? Any haunting stories outside of Linda Vista that really caught you guys off guard?
Well, I can share. Maybe a case that I won't mention any names or anything like
sure.
that. But there was a residence right down the street from right off of St. Louis, and they were experiencing during the night somebody rummaging through their kitchen utensils.
That's how strong it was.
Yeah,
you could hear it.
You could hear somebody going through their knives and their forks, opening up the pantry, and you know, and they wouldn't find anything out of the ordinary as far as the next morning when they woke up. No chairs were stacked or nothing like that, but they would find the drawers pulled out, you know.
So it physically happened.
Yeah. And so and they wanted to know, you know, what the heck, are we going crazy? Do you guys believe in what we're experiencing? And you know, the only thing is that you know, you kind of have to walk into the situation after three very strenuous and detailed interviews with the person that's experiencing this. That's when we go in. We have to do pre-interviews before we even go into a residence, for obvious reasons, because we can, you know, the person could be just, you know, bonkers.
So but you guys have your questions.
We have a questionnaire
that will provide an answer that you want to get before you go into their house.
Yes,
we're looking for trigger answers, specific answers that would kind of like tip us off the fact that this person is on the level. You know, you want to kind of weed out people who are just kind of intention seekers, just want to
looking
come in
for attention.
Yeah, I'm trying to get this on network TV.
Yeah,
I'm
they want a television show. Or
yeah,
something.
They want a television show, and that's not a problem. That's a whole other Oprah, but that's part of it too. Is that everybody with the advent of cable television shows that are geared towards the fantastic and the over the top stuff that we kind of what we do gets kind of mixed in with all of that. And paranormal research is really not about that at all. It's kind of like the antithesis of what we're really trying to do. It's really kind of tedious work. And we spend a lot of our time reviewing audio, and that's kind of boring, you know, after about 4 hours of reviewing audio.
Just really listening carefully, right?
You do. I mean,
first
you
got to record it, and then listen to it, and then record it, and then listen to it.
Yeah, it's very rare. You know, those kinds of EVPs are very, very rare. It's not like as common as you would think. Looking at a television show, oh, we got this. But it's like, that's hours of combing through evidence. And it doesn't really happen as frequently as most people believe that it does.
Right.
I'd like to touch on something with that, going into the community itself. It was it was a very big thing. I mean, I explained to the crew early on in 2009, 2010 that, hey, look at, we are a paranormal research group. We're going to go into residences. We're going to go into businesses. And we are going to try to validate what people are saying they're experiencing. Now, there was absolutely no way, you know, in the community of Boyle Heights, you can't just go into anybody's house.
Right.
Yeah. You have to create and gain some type of rapport and trust. And so, luckily for us, we were put in a situation or in a position at Linda Vista Hospital where we were able to facilitate and create a bridge between paranormal research and the general community. And in creating that bridge, we were able to allow the community to come to us.
Sure. It was open door you provided.
Yes.
Yeah.
And people probably, you know, trust you guys enough to tell their stories.
Yes. That was the initial draw for
me. Priceless.
That was the original draw for me going into the Boyle Heights Project. I saw in the Boyle Heights Project a unique opportunity that Rich had had got with Linda Vista Management to kind of outreach to a community that really wanted to speak about it, but really didn't have the platform to really kind of get out there and talk about their experiences. And I thought also that it was a good opportunity for Rich to align himself with the community, to better itself, to take pride in the community too. So there's a cultural renaissance going on in Boyle Heights, if
Absolutely.
You don't already know. So there's a cultural renaissance in art and music, and kind of liked all of that stuff. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and I didn't even know. I'm a Valley guy, so I didn't know anything about Boyle Heights. Coming into the whole, coming into the project, it's like, this is a whole different thing. You know, it's coming in from San Fernando Valley, Encino, and all that other stuff. It's like, wow, this is a whole new world for me.
Sure. Now, can you explain, now these Linda Vista tours, is that what it's called, the appropriate name for what you provide?
You know, we call it the flashlight tour or the Friday the 13th tour. You know,
right. So. And it's facilitated by the Boyle Heights Paranormal Project. And you could do these tours of Linda Vista Hospital.
Yes.
Now, never done it, but I know so many people who have, and it's epic. And it's, you know, everyone's just very happy. The feedback is great. And they just feel that it's a very interesting experience if you're open to that kind of thing. Now, can you describe when people sign up for your tour and go online and reserve and pay money, what do they get?
Well, you know, we have to be really careful when we do announce a tour. It's got to the point now where we have to just announce it 2 or 3 days before the actual tour date, because if we give it a week or 2 weeks, they're so popular, we'll have almost 400 or 500 people wrapped around the block.
Wow.
So
that's what I'm saying. Everyone
is
talking
about. Yeah, a group our size
it.
Can't facilitate that safely, especially in a place like Linda Vista Hospital, because, you know, after all, it's the busiest film location east of the LA River. You know, it's got major film production going on almost daily.
I know Metallica's made a video there.
Yeah, Foo Fighters,
Eminem, and the movies that have been filmed there, are like what?
Pearl Harbor, Outbreak, Arnold Schwarzenegger movie.
Yeah.
It escaped my mind.
End of Days.
Yeah. And so
just
Insidious 2 just finished wrapping filming there about 2 weeks.
For who?
And tomorrow we're actually giving a tour for the press for the Insidious 2 opening at the hospital tomorrow.
Yeah.
Wow, very cool.
Yeah. That's kind of cool.
So it's a pretty busy film location. So when we say, hey, check it out, join us tomorrow night for a tour. They get about an hour and a half of history, and you know, I always get the group together, and I said, okay, look, I'm going to give you guys what you want. Just let me know what it is you want. Do you want to hear the history or the paranormal history? Do you guys want to do a 1 hour walkthrough tour of the facility, or do you want me to walk you around for 30 minutes and then give you guys 45 minutes to walk around on your own? And so they always, you know, it's always up to them. That way, when they walk away, they're happy, you know. So
you truly give them what they want.
Yes. Well, we try to, you know.
Try to.
With the restrictions that we have far as, like I said, it being a location, it could be.
How many floors is it?
Linda Vista is five working floors.
Right.
Yeah.
Is there any floor that is just so, you know, active with paranormal activity?
You know, I would have to say
that. Or is it all equal?
I would have to say everybody's favorite is the first floor.
The bottom floor?
Yeah. And I think reason being is because the records room is on the first floor, along with the original pathology room, which was the morgue. And then we have on the first floor the surgical suites where people actually were worked on, you know, advanced life-saving techniques. The radiology surgical ward is also there. And most importantly, and I think this is the big draw for a lot of paranormal researchers, is a room that we call the yellow room, because it's circa 1920s, beautiful yellow tile on the walls and on the floor and stuff. And this was one of Los Angeles County's very first trauma rooms. So documentation there at the hospital has shown us that there have been more deaths in that single room than anywhere else in the hospital. So a lot of researchers like that first floor, you know.
Okay.
Me personally, I like the second floor.
And why is that?
Second floor is where I've had my a couple of profound experiences that threw me for a loop, you know. And although, you know, it's fun to be on the first floor and watch other people have their experience, you know. But the second floor is my favorite.
Right.
Actually, people can go onto YouTube and see what you're talking about, right?
Yeah.
Now, Richard, in the beginning, were you a skeptic?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I was growing up reading my dad's books on Bigfoot, the UFOs. So that was kind of like in the back of my head, you know. And then I realized that, you know what, there's more to it. There's more to life, you know. And then while I was in college, I got a job with the medical examiner's office picking up the deceased.
Wow.
And so there was many hours.
You worked for the coroner?
Yes. While I was in college. And I spent many hours in the what they called the refrigeration unit of the crypts, right? And I would fingerprint the, you know, the decedents, and I would look in their eyes like, okay, you know, yeah. You know, there has to be something more, because, you know, looking at the face and in the eyes and their features, you know, this is just way too awesome for it to end right here.
Right.
You know,
there has to be a continuation, right?
Yeah, totally, yeah. And so I decided that, you know what, I started, you know, doing some research, started reading up on it, and then I started doing my own thing, you know, growing up, you know, and experiencing the Native American sweat lodge with my family, going into ceremony and seeing things in the lodge that blew me away. I decided that, you know, after many questions to, you know, my father and the elders, that it was time to step it up a notch and start researching seriously. And so I believe that I've come to the conclusion now that we walk, you know, side by side with the spirit world, and every once in a while we kind of cross paths.
We connect.
Yeah.
Physically.
I mean, it gives you such a profound respect for other spiritual paths as well.
Right.
It really does.
Right. Now, as far as the hospital goes and your research there, I mean, you've talked about the audio. Has anyone ever seen anything with their eyes?
Yes. We have actually on film Steve Thornton. He was invited. He was at the time that he filmed this. He was actually a part of a separate crew. And he's a great tech guy. The guy knows everything you have to know about electronics and stuff. And he set up an IR camera. And one night he just was able to catch, as he was sweeping around the room, he was able to catch what seems to be about 6.5 to 7 feet tall, a dark shadow person walking outside of the lobby, and he actually caught it on film.
So you guys have that?
Yeah.
We have that, yeah. And so
it's pretty profound, not going to lie.
Yeah. It was caught on IR, so the videotape, you know, and in all reality, it's very grainy. But you can, everybody that has seen the footage will say, oh, yeah, there he is. I see it, you know. And walking super fast.
That was really fast.
And wow. He's, you know, on the video itself, he's kind of slowed it down and kind of like lightened up, enhanced it, you know, just so you can see the actual shadow, you know, break the light. And so that was pretty profound, you know. There was a time, March 8th, 2010, I was sweeping the lobby area, and I was the only one in the hospital at the time. We were getting ready for an event, and I saw a gentleman standing in the door, and I kind of looked at him, and I'm like, well, he's not supposed to be here. And we're always, you know, being bombarded by trespassers and vandalism and stuff. And so I have to, you know, as soon as I see something like that, I have to pump up my chest, you know, and walk over and, hey, what's going on?
Yeah.
You know? So I kind of like, the moment I acknowledged seeing him, he never looked at me once. His back was turned towards, you know, he was looking into the room. So when I saw him, I dropped the mop and I ran over to the door, and then he kind of just went deeper into that room. So I actually ran to the door that he would have exited because there was no other way out, and there wasn't anybody in there.
Jeez.
Okay, and so I ran to the windows. It's like a 13-foot drop, and so I'm like, where is this guy? You know, I know I saw a man standing in this doorway. So I kind of like stepped back, and I'm like, okay, what did I just see, you know? So I ran all over, first floor, third floor, fourth floor, fifth floor, looking everywhere. Nobody was there, right?
Wow. Now, as far as other researchers coming, I mean, it just seems like, you know, your project has put Linda Vista on the map for the paranormal research. Have people come from different places?
Yeah. Well, I mean,
far to come check it out and get and put their research.
Yes. To be fair, and the Boyle Heights Paranormal Project came to Linda Vista in 2009. Before 2009, there was a lot more local paranormal research teams visiting the hospital on a regular basis, and it wasn't until 2009 that Linda Vista actually said, you know what, let's put our trust in a local group and let's allow them to facilitate some type of community outreach program here. And so that's the only reason why I think that we became a little more popular due to that fact, you know, that we were able to.
I think
even
the exclusive.
Right, yeah. And even then, other groups came in, you know, groups are still coming in to do paranormal research and stuff like that. We're just not the only group. We haven't, you know, locked the doors and just, no one else can come in. No, absolutely not. So we don't have that type of power there. You know, we're just really fortunate to be in a position where the management allows us to do what we do there, you know, and we're very grateful.
As far as the ranking of most paranormal active building, I mean, I heard something when I first met you. I think I said it was like the most haunted place in California. Then you gave me an answer saying it was like the third most America. Now, how does the world of paranormal research come up with that scale and say this is it just everyone's collective information?
I think it's very subjective. I think depending on what state you live in, you're going to have a location that is equally as active as Linda Vista.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you got in upstate New York, you got the Rolling Hills Estates, got the Eastern State Penitentiary.
Yeah, Ohio State Reformatory.
Yeah, and then you had, even here in California, you had
Camarillo. Yeah, I was doing a research at ironically, it's now Cal State University, but before that, it was a mental hospital, and I did about 11 years of straight research there every weekend, pretty much.
And where was this now?
It's in Camarillo. I can't mention the hospital because I don't want to get sued. But I did do research there, and that's where I came in. That's where I cut my teeth as a researcher, because I did so much research there. I mean, pretty much every weekend I was there doing research, and it was an abandoned mental hospital. So my experiences were very much like Richard's. It was just very much similar to what he was experiencing at Linda Vista. So when I met him and I heard the stories about what he was telling me, I go, wow, yeah, that makes sense, because I am experiencing kind of the same thing in Ventura.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think getting back to your question, I think that the major television shows are the ones that are actually calling
those shots.
Those shots, as far as what's the most haunted,
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So I mean, this is coming, you know, through the power of major media.
Media. Yes.
And a huge platform that they have.
Yeah.
Right.
So that carries weight. That's just the way
Absolutely.
It is.
Yeah.
You know. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, as far as you personally, is there a right or wrong way to research? Is it more of an intuitive?
God, that's such a great question. Nobody ever asked that question before. I think you know, there are how-to books, or there's a lot of books that are kind of like 101s for doing research.
The Dummy's Guide to
the Dummy's
Ghost
Guide. And some of them actually, believe it or not, are kind of helpful. But I kind of just, I started on my own, because when I started at a time when there was not too many groups out there.
Sure.
And it was very exclusive, and it was kind of hard to get in the group. Still is. It's very cliquish. But I just started to do my kind of do my own thing. I just bought myself a recorder from like Target or whatever,
right?
And a flashlight, and I just started doing stuff. Not even at night necessarily. The only reason I think people do stuff at night is because it's there's less ambient sound. There's people are mostly asleep.
Right. You want to get less of the white noise.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So most people say, well, does it have to be at night? Well, no, it doesn't. It could be in the daytime too, as long as there's a quiet environment where you can just sit down and kind of just focus on what you're doing and not really talk and whisper. But there's no right or, I mean, I just kind of, you kind of just learn as you go, I think.
Right.
Like everything else.
Now, with any situation where it's Linda Vista or a business or a home, it's audio visual, you're recording. Right. That's the primary components for research. Is that correct?
Those are the two main sources of data that we're getting these days.
Now, are there any other gadgets that pick up like energy frequencies?
Yeah, but a lot of those are misappropriated. I mean, they won't tell you that on Ghost, whatever, you know, on blah, blah, blah show.
Sure.
A lot of those are misappropriated gadgets that electricians use to assess a current in a given outlet or whatever. And I think, I don't know where the genesis came from that they could be used. I guess people are thinking out of the box, which is great,
Right.
But those equipment that they used, a lot of that equipment wasn't originally intended for ghost hunting per se. It was just something they thought, well, why don't we just use this to measure magnetic fields or whatever?
I mean, the theory is that if there's some type of electrical outlets or it must be able to help the spirit manifest, you know, through that electricity and so, or, you know, disturbance of ionic, you know.
Sure. Now, this is a funny question because it has to do with Hollywood.
Okay.
But I want to know, since this is your profession, the movie Poltergeist, how well does that represent paranormal research in a situation like that? Do you think it's pretty realistic, like the interviews in the beginning and then they're staying at the house and then they experience what they experience? I mean,
I think Hollywood's version of what we it's a more Hollywood over the top version of what we do has very little to do with what we actually do as researchers. And with Poltergeist, actually Poltergeist is not really a haunting per se. It's mostly a psychological where the adolescent in the home is basically haunting themselves. It's basically, they have a lot of pent-up energy going through puberty, and that energy is manifesting in PK ways, in ways that they can make things move. That's the theory. It doesn't have anything to do with
prepubescent teens.
Yeah, and it usually happens in young females. Yeah. It does happen in males. It usually happens in females between the ages of 11 and I think to maybe 15, 16. It's more predominant in females. That's the theory. That's a working theory.
And this is all due to just a change in growth.
Yes.
And just having so much energy.
Yeah, they're going through
Teenage angst.
Yeah, maybe. Teenage angst are going through a difficult time. I had a case in Simi Valley where it was my first and only poltergeist case where a lot of stuff was appearing and reappearing in different, like she had a Bible, actually a Book of Mormon. And she had it in the room, and then it would appear in the hamper or just really random places. She'd have coins appearing from different years that she never collected appear in her room. It just rocks, the little pebbles being thrown at her window. And when she'd walk under a light, public light, like an outside light, it would kind of dim, and then it kind of go back to its normal power when she'd walk
away. So items appearing in a room, like coins from different years.
Apparitions.
Phenomenon.
There was a very famous case in England. It's called a skull. It's the skull experiment. There's a book on it. I think your reader or your listenership should look that up on the internet.
It's also on Netflix, too.
It's amazing.
It's a documentary?
Yeah, it's called the
skull experiment.
And that's about a poltergeist?
Or? It's actually about we were just talking about apports and
items falling out of the sky and stuff.
It was pretty well studied, and they still can't explain everything that kind of went on during that 5-year period.
Yeah, wow.
Very profound.
And for you, the Simi Valley case, that was your one and only
poltergeist case that I've got called to other ones. That was the only one that I saw through fruition. The other ones I kind of just sent other people out to investigate because I didn't live so close. So that was the one that was closest to me.
But, so, for example, this one in Simi Valley, like how long were you involved in the research?
I was involved in that particular case for, I would say, 2 months. And I sought the advice of other people who knew about these types of cases. And they told me that it would just come and go and that eventually that energy would dissipate. And in fact, it did. After about a year, I got in contact with the girl and the mom. They were going through a lot of, you know, headbutting at the time, the mom and the daughter, just going through a real difficult period. But as soon as they reestablished healthier communication, that phenomenon, that stuff that was happening around the house, it kind of just dissipated.
So in many ways, it seems like, you know, it goes, the root of that could be just how powerful the human brain is.
Yeah, it's just a huge...
It creates waves and and it could create movement of objects, and people don't realize what they're creating them because they just don't know.
Yeah, that's paranormal too. It doesn't, it's just as important, just as awe-inspiring. It's not maybe as fantastic as we see on TV, but, you know, it's still worth studying for me. It's a huge psychological
thing. I think, also too, I mean, he brought up Poltergeist. I think that, did you see the movie The Entity?
I did.
That was Barbara Hershey, 1970.
Yeah, no, that was a pretty famous.
That was based on a case. I think it was in San Pedro.
Yeah.
That was based on a case in San Pedro.
Yes. Yeah, and at one time UCLA, and in fact, it wasn't just UCLA, a lot of universities had actual parapsychology programs, and then they got in kind of this pissing contest with actual psychology, and the funding that the parapsychology units had, it started to kind of go away. Ultimately, a lot of the schools dropped parapsychology altogether, but there was an actual degree for parapsychology.
Right.
So in Scotland, they still have them.
Scotland facilitates that education.
Yeah, I think University of Arizona also does study it on some levels. University of Arizona, that's one of the only ones that I know. Maybe Brown University.
Ryan Institute?
The Ryan Institute, I think, out of North Carolina.
So there's only a few colleges.
Yeah, the Ryan Research Center in North Carolina, I think, Duke. I think it's Duke. They've developed such a great program there, so it's kind of an offshoot that the actual established academia doesn't want to kind of really get involved in. They just kind of want to take a step back from it because it's so out there. It's so out there.
Right. It's so unconventional, right?
Yeah, it's very unconventional. They want to continue their funding for their program, so they just have a tendency to kind of just shy away from the subject altogether.
I mean, they're getting into money from the government.
Yeah, they don't want to lose their
endowments.
They don't want to use their tenure. You know, they don't want to just, it's like, hey, you know, it's just like, you do what you do, but, you know, don't bug me, you know, what kind of deal.
So going back to the Linda Vista Hospital and you guys working out of there and outreaching to the community, do you think that, for me, the outside looking in, it seems like if you guys wouldn't be there, people wouldn't come forward with their stories and they would be bottled up. And it just seems like no matter how far you guys go with them, it just seems like you guys are also providing a way for people to vent about experiences.
Well, yeah.
And that can be very therapeutic and positive for someone.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, there's we get every day we get messages on our Facebook page. Hey, you know, you guys are doing a great job. Thank you so much for allowing us to do this. Thank you so much for taking the time to explain some stuff to us. You know, we've put on major community events where we actually wanted to bring back the basics to paranormal research. And so in April of 2011, we put on the Los Angeles Paranormal Powwow, where we invited the community to come out. And we went back to basics, where we opened up the conference with a Native American brother of ours who came out and sang some songs. We burned some sage. And we went into the spirit realm in a
real positive,
traditional way.
Yeah.
And which is positive.
Which is positive.
Not to be scared or
not to be afraid,
you know, hurt. It's just like you go in there, you face it, and take control of the situation.
Yeah, and to this day, we have a lot of, you know, positive feedback. And so I think that in the end, I think that, you know, we, through our community outreach program, we've reached a bunch of people that wouldn't ordinarily be able to share their experiences and, you know.
Yeah, everybody has a story. Everybody has a story. Like, I'll be approached by a lot of people, especially a lot of guys, will say, well, Lewis, I really don't believe this, but this is what my wife is telling me. It's really them using their wife or their third person. Like, this is what I've been told, and it's happening in my... So everybody has a story, whether or not you believe it or not.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, with that being said, you know, we also started a mentorship program at three of the local high schools.
Yeah.
You know, Roosevelt, Bravo.
Well, let's talk about that. You guys actually mentor the kids.
Yes.
Yeah. So you guys bring them.
So at the beginning of the year, they have Club Rush Week where everyone wants to join the club. And so some students decided that, well, you know what? There's a Bible club, science club. Let's do a paranormal research club. And so they
very
reach out.
Very cool.
Yeah, totally. I wish they had that one. I was not
exactly. Oh, well, yeah.
No, so, you had to seek harder. But now you're providing a platform for these kids, you know?
Yeah. And so we were able to, through their through the mentorship program and their facility or their staff sponsor, we were able to allow them to come into the hospital with us and do actual paranormal research where they would go back to their school and present it to the student body. And now Francisco Bravo Medical Magnet School has an annual paranormal conference, which is pretty cool.
Very
it's
cool.
Really, really cool. Yeah,
and that's a high school.
It's a high school.
It's wow.
Magnet, Boyle Heights,
yeah.
And it just seems like, you know, that's like you were saying, you know, in the college world, it's unconventional. People have detached themselves from it.
Right.
But it still draws a lot of interest. There's a common thread that will, you know, everyone around the world has a story and has their beliefs and can strike up a conversation like this. So the fact that you're operating out of Boyle Heights and you're giving the kids a platform
right
locally versus having to seek like you guys had to.
Yeah.
You know, you're really providing an opportunity, which is great.
It also teaches the kids a little bit about social activism, about learning about ways where they can really affect change in their community. So it's really kind of cool using the hospital as a backdrop, as a draw, you know, as an initial draw to get the kids in to learn about science or math or forensic science.
Mm-hmm.
So it's for me, that's the way I look at it. You know, it's a great way to kind of share my knowledge of the paranormal at the same time, teach them, hey, you know what, these are the kind of opportunities afforded to you if you stay in school and study hard and do all that. Doors will open, and it's great. It's a real positive way to really affect kids.
Like that girl who did she did this diorama on the California Bigfoot phenomena, right? And I went up to her little display and I'm reading everything. I'm like, wow, this girl's really into it, you know? And, you know, talking to her for a few minutes. And, you know, luckily for me, just about 2 months before, I went up to the Bigfoot Museum up in Felton, California.
Cool.
Where I was given an actual casting of the Bluff Creek Bigfoot print.
Oh, wow.
So I kind of took her to the side and said, hey, well, here, check this out. What do you think about this? And she was like blown away. She was like touching it and like, oh my God, can I take a picture with it? And, you know, it was a great experience for her as a student, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, as somebody who's studying cryptozoology.
So she's really committed to that whole thing. And you just said, here's a cast.
Well, she actually told me straight, I want to be a cryptozoologist.
Yeah.
How old is she?
So an 11th grader.
Yeah. So it's cool. So
16, 17?
Yeah.
Wow.
So it's kind of cool. So now she's going to be studying biology or, you know, it's really great to see kids kind of come into the hospital and we're able to teach them stuff. And it's like they take that back to their house or they'll say, wow, you know, if I keep studying hard enough, I could do this stuff for a living. I actually get paid for it, which is really, really cool. You know?
Right. Now, as far as, aside from the paranormal research tours you guys do, what are you guys using the hospital for as well? I mean, there's academia workshops, like you're saying, right?
Yeah, when we were holding paranormal conferences regularly, at least once or twice a year.
Mm-hmm.
And we were doing community movie nights.
Is that still happening?
You know what? It's barely going to start back up because the future of the hospital is so iffy at this time, you know, because the developers who purchased the hospital are very leery of allowing the public in, their, you know, the insurance reasons and stuff like
sure.
that. So we have to make sure.
Because they're
that
liable if something
they're liable,
happens.
Yes.
Right.
So we have to make sure that everything's covered. And so it's whatever they allow us to do, basically. Okay. Yeah. If they say on a Wednesday night, okay, we'll go on, have a movie night, you know, so we'll scramble for 24 hours to try to make something happen on that Saturday night, you know. So that's
so it's very like short notice like that. Then you guys have to scramble.
It's very aggressive.
Seize that opportunity.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Now, do you guys see on the horizon possible movie nights happening for the summer and stuff like that?
Yeah, we have a proposal right now in front of the new ownership for movie nights out on the main lawn. So.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, that'll be cool.
It gives the kids something to do. I mean, a lot of these kids don't really have anything to do in the summer. They can't really afford it anyway.
Sure.
Even if they could.
We did, I think it was last year we did Zombie Prom.
We did. Tell them about Zombie Prom.
Zombie Prom.
Yeah,
October. Tell them about Zombie Prom. Yeah.
At the end of this, the hospital?
Dude, it was off the hook.
Yeah. We
tell
had,
them about that.
We
that
had
awesome.
DJ, we had DJ Cody Lee come out from Club Spunday.
Yeah.
And he did the music that night. And we actually... opened up Linda Vista Hospital to the community. And
wow.
It was a canned drive.
It was actually a canned food drive for the holidays. And we had about maybe, I think we raised 1,725 pounds of food
wow.
that night.
That was really cool.
We had over 1,000 local community members, mainly high school and junior college. They came out all dressed like zombies, and they went into the main chapel area and danced the night away.
Okay? That's cool.
It was amazing. It was a really cool experience, and not one problem.
Not one problem.
Very
and these
cool.
are kids that would have never had otherwise something to do that particular weekend. And so it was really cool that we're able to do that for them.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Now, are there any events coming up you want to promote and let the people know before we leave?
Yes. July 13th at Linda Vista Hospital, we are having the something that's kind of been in the works for a while. It's called the East of the River Art and Music Festival.
Oh, wow.
And we're going to have Los Fabulocos heading off the music, and we're going to feature local East Side artists and their creations.
So live bands, and live art?
Live art, poetry. We're going to have a gourmet food truck fair along okay. with local vendors. And it's going to turn out to be a good time.
And the name of the event again?
It's called the East of the River Art and Music Festival.
I think you guys should come out and do a live podcast.
We should.
Yeah, you're more than welcome to.
And that's the night before my band plays with Black Flag.
That's right, Quebec.
There you go. You can go out there and plug your...
You know what? As far as more information about the event, where can people go to find information?
You go straight to the Boyle Heights Paranormal Project on Facebook. They have all the information there.
Okay, well, hey, thank you so much for making it out.
Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
And my guest for the first hour at beersinparadise.com.
That was a great show, by the way.
Roy and Guillermo and the Boyle Heights Paranormal Project. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
This is Ignacio Salcido from La Mezcla de Bakery in Boyle Heights. You're listening to LA Nista and SkidRowStudios.com.
This episode of Los Angeles Nista is brought to you by La Mascota Bakery, a family-owned business serving the community since 1952. Tamales and sweetbread, made the old-fashioned way daily.